Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, guys, guess what?
What?
What's that, girl?
I just got on Mastodon, and I'm psyched about it. I already have, like, 40 followers.
Yeah, I know you're there. I already changed your password, Carl.
What? That's why I couldn't log on just now. All right, so how you guys doing? I really did get on Mastodon, and I thought that, you know, that's going to be the first announcement. And in fact, I'll link to my account, but apparently Mastodon is in our news this week.
It sure is. Yes.
That's not a good sign.
Well, no. We'll get there, though.
We have
a few other stories. So who wants to go first?
So this first one, we always like to start off with our three questions.
Right.
You know, what vulnerabilities are out there this week?
Right.
What's been patched? What should you be worried about? So the first one we're going to start with is Lightspeed Web Server.
Okay. What's that?
So Lightspeed Web Server is literally just a, you know, a lot of you probably know about IIS or Apache or whatnot. It's just another web serving technology that you may or may not be using, depending on what, you know, services you have your website up on.
Is it a cloud service or is it something that you run on premises?
So I believe it's both. You can run it up in the cloud, or you can run it as a cloud on a local service as well.
I'm sure some cloud services, some of the lower end hosting providers are probably going to have this because I believe it's free, isn't it? It's open source.
Yeah, it's open source. Yep.
Yeah,
you can run this open source. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see these in smaller type, you know, IoT devices as well. So this is where it's hard, because you take like a router or a switch that has a web server on it. Well, what are they running? A lot of times it's not full Apache, right? Even, you know, a little IoT device that you plug into the wall to turn on and off lights. You know, does that device run a web server? Usually they do. And some of them might be using Lightspeed Web Server.
So the story is that vulnerabilities can lead to complete web server takeover.
Yes. Yeah. This list of vulnerabilities. So let's start with the how do we know we're affected? If you're using Lightspeed with a version of 5.4.6 and 6.0.11, or if you're using Open Lightspeed with a version of 1.5.11 or 1.7.16, I know it's a lot out there, but if you're using Lightspeed, you probably should go out there and see whether you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
Okay.
What to do if you're affected? Here again, here's a classic patch, right? So you really do need to go in and patch. And some of the flaws here in Lightspeed, one of them, for example, is a directory traversal flaw, which I know we talked about
last week,
I think. Yeah.
Sure, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yep. And that, you know, where people can just get access to data they shouldn't get access to. But there are more severe flaws in here. So if you do have Lightspeed server, you should patch. That's the what to do.
And the advertisement here is you have to know what you have to protect it. So if you don't have this, then that's fine. But if you don't know you don't, that you do have it, that's a problem. This is the SBOM thing that we've talked about.
Right.
You need to know what software. I might hire somebody to host my website and outsource it. Well, I outsource that to someone else. Well, all right. Are they running Lightspeed because they want to save a buck? And they want to host it on their own server? You need to find that out. So you need an inventory. So this is the advertisement, the public service announcement, that you need a software inventory that of the things that you're using and the things that your vendors are using. And that's going to take a lot of torturing of staff and vendors to get.
So I'm at NDC Minnesota conference here. And yesterday, the keynote was done by a security professional who I hadn't met before. So her name is not fresh in my mind. But she basically was talking about SBOM and, you know, this is the new hotness and stuff. And just knowing what you're depending on is good for technology, not just for security. So she put up a graph of a dependency map of a typical node package, right? An NPM package. And there were so many, you know, it looked like a galaxy, like a spiral galaxy. There were so many. Hundreds, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea.
Yep.
Because you depend on, A depends on B, which depends on C, D, and E, and each of those have dependencies, and it just never ends.
Right. The critical thing to understand is that there's so many dependencies, and all Dwayne needs is access to one.
Yeah.
And you're behind the door.
Right. Mwahaha.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. That's a good way to start off the show. What's next? I think it has something to do with that country that's at war right now. The one that started the war. Oh, yes. Russia.
Oh, yes. Russia. Yes.
Yes. Russia.
So this was an interesting article. This one was from Bruce Schneier, who, you know, luminary in the, you know, cryptography, and yeah, it does a lot of really great things. And what's interesting about, so usually he's reasonably quiet, and when I see like a tweet or something come across from him, it's usually like, hey, there's this really kind of crazy
something
thing you
important.
Should take. Yeah, what's weird is he's really good about finding the things you should be worried about that aren't in the news.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like, hey, guys, you should look at Log4j, right?
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Thanks, Bruce. Like, everybody knows that. But, you know, he'll find these esoteric, very interesting things and go, hey, by the way, nobody's actually talking about this. So I just thought I'd throw this out here.
Yeah.
Right.
So this one is Russian software company pretending to be American. Code developed by a company called Push Whoosh.
Push Whoosh?
Push Whoosh is in about 8,000 Apple and Google smartphone apps.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 8,000 Apple and Google smartphone apps. This company pretends to be American when it's actually a Russian company.
Now, just because it's a Russian company, does it mean that it is doing nefarious things?
Because they're pretending to be American, I would say yes.
Well, okay. It's interesting you say that, Patrick. So, you know, we've given advice on this show plenty of times where we say, hey, what do you do? Like with your iPhone or your Android device or whatever. Well, if you have an Android device, throw it out and get an iPhone. How do we know? Like, how do we know what apps are good or what apps we should download? And usually if you go to the App Store or the Google Play Store and you scroll all the way to the bottom of an app, you'll see who the developers are. You'll see who the company is. Mm. And if it's a company you trust, be careful. Sometimes it'll look very close to a company you trust's name. Mm. Mm-hmm. So you want to actually take a look at the site, take a look at who the developers are, do an external search for the app name and the developer name and that sort of stuff. So if it's somebody you trust, yeah, download it. And I think you're right, Patrick. In this particular case, nobody is saying that this particular add-on has an exploit or they're doing anything nefarious with it. Nobody's saying that.
Okay.
What they are saying is it's kind of weird for a company to try and mislead the public as to where they're from, right?
But what are their motivations? What are the reasons? Is it a financial reason? Is it because they couldn't get access to certain resources that they needed to publish the app? Like you don't know.
Right.
That's the most benign way, but can you take a chance?
Yeah, and
that's true, I suppose.
Oddly enough, the focus of this particular library, if you will, that's used is for tracking users and app usage. Right?
Oh, so okay. I'm convinced.
And install.
Uninstall, I think. I have a guy that I worked for said that back in the 80s, he got hired to write some software by the Russian Ministry of Fisheries to operate some technology to detect fish.
Is that is that fish with a PH?
Oh my God! The Department of Fisheries PH would be fantastic.
We're looking for big steel fish.
We anyway. Just hear fishing.
Yes. Strong fishing industry.
Strong like bull. Okay.
Sir, why are you in why are you in Tennessee if you're here for fishing?
Right. So so what can we do about this? How can we find out if Push Whoosh is part of any apps that we have on our phone?
Well, that is a hard thing to figure out, unfortunately. So this we put into the category of supply chain attacks, right? It's not like you're going to go to the App Store and say, hey, I'd love to download Push Whoosh. You're going to download some other app that uses it as a library for tracking and understanding usage. Now, according to Push Whoosh's, you know, statements, they say they do not collect any sensitive information. But there again, for a company trying to present themselves as a, you know, California or Maryland style company when they're not really out of those locations, well, you got to wonder how much you can trust their statement.
If you can't trust someone who just lied to you, who can you trust?
Right. Yeah. You make a fine point, sir.
Okay. Should we move on to F5?
Yeah, let's absolutely move on to F5.
This is something I don't know much about F5, except they have some sort of device that does things black box-ish in your network. What do they do?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. F5 does do some black box-ish things. You know, we won't go into all of the things that the F5 devices do, but suffice it to say, they're network devices. So think like router, switch, firewall type devices. And they typically are around protecting digital assets. So like I can have an F5 device sitting in front of my web servers that make sure that people aren't, you know, trying to scan my web servers to find out vulnerabilities or trying to do SQL injection, right? There's all sorts of really great things that they do. Unfortunately, even these types of devices also are susceptible to their own vulnerabilities, and that's what these are.
Hey, before you go into what happened here, let's just take a moment to pause for this very important message.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And we're back. I'm Carl Franklin with Security This Week. Patrick Hines and Dwayne LaFlotte are here with me, of course. And we were just talking about F5, fixing high-severity RCE bugs, or one bug, in devices called Big IP and Big IQ.
Yes. Yeah, Big IP is a product that's been around for a long time. So there could be a lot of market penetration there. So I'm not really sure about Big IQ. I assume it's just
maybe it's a smart device.
Maybe.
We'd hope. We would hope.
So it's, you know, it's interesting. This was actually discovered by Rapid7, which, you know, for those of you in the hacking communities, you know the name Rapid7. For those of you not in the hacking communities, Rapid7 actually puts out some really great tools out there, Metasploit being one of them, which is, you know, the one of the sort of almost point and click style hacking tools for Hacky offensive hack. Security. Right. And they do a great job of doing their own research. So, you know, this is just one of the things that they've discovered. You know, they do a fantastic job. So, so interestingly enough, this is a CSRF, which is just a cross-site request forgery. Anytime you see an RF, a request forgery, it's where you have the ability as the attacker to make another, either the client or the server, make a request on your behalf.
Okay.
Right. So like a server side request forgery is where I can make a request to a web server and have that web server then make a request for me to another web server.
All right.
Right. Client side request forgery is where I would then go in and tell, you know, put up some code on a web server that a client would download and force that client to make a request for me. In this place, it's in this case, it's a cross-site request forgery where I might have site A make a request to site B.
It almost sounds like a nefarious VPN.
Yeah, in some ways you can liken it to that, where you're coercing some endpoint to do something for you.
Right.
What's interesting is in these request forgeries, they sound silly, right? Okay, well, like for example, if I make a request to server A, to web server A,
yeah,
and it makes another request on my behalf, what do I care? Right.
Right.
So what? You know, right. The hacker could have made that request anyways. But I'll tell you, in a recent pen test we actually just did, one of the ways we were able to breach the network was by making a request to server A and then having, which was a web server.
Yeah.
And then having that web server make a request for us on the DMZ.
The demilitarized zone?
Yeah. So you, in a normal network setup, you would have your internal network and then you have a firewall. And then on the outside of the firewall, you have all of your web servers and that sort of stuff. And then on the outside of those, you have another firewall. So that intermediary layer is usually called the DMZ or demilitarized zone. It's a place where you don't quite trust anything that might be there, but you have to serve up services to the outside world.
Right.
So we were able to coerce one of the web servers that we hit for this particular organization to then make requests on our behalf internally. So we could start seeing administrative websites and that sort of stuff that weren't accessible to the internet, right? So that's why some of these style attacks, although they don't sound like they might be risky, they really are, because now I'm getting a view inside potentially that server could see.
And if you do think that that's not risky, I have some packages I'd like you to transport for me. Don't look inside.
Don't do it. Just hand them off. That is a great. Honestly, that's a great physical analogy.
Yeah, Patrick, sure is.
As to what these types of things are.
Why? Whatever do you mean? I just have these cookies. I need you to bring to my auntie. That's all.
My auntie. I like it. With that CSRF, forcing the server to do a request on our behalf, they're calling a SOAP API, and I don't remember.
Okay, talk simple about SOAP. Object access protocol.
Yes,
woo, nice.
This is an XML based protocol by which you can programmatically make a call to a web service. That now that function is taken over by, sending JSON instead of XML over HTTP with authentication and all that stuff. But SOAP was the first try, at least in our circle of understanding in the Microsoft.NET space. But it was an open protocol and still is.
Yeah. Actually, I do remember when they came out with SOAP and they started talking a lot like, this is going to be a SOAP bubble. And you're like, no, stop.
So bubble, stop
like,
it.
They tried to keep that paradigm, and now, no.
Our friend Don Box was one of the guys that was on the committee that designed SOAP, as was Dave Weiner, who invented RSS, I think.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
And RSS is an XML-based protocol that all podcasts use and blogs.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. History lesson over.
Right. Wake up, kids. So what's neat about the SOAP API is, like Carl had said, SOAP is just you can make a request with a JSON payload that then asks the server to do something for you.
Well, SOAP is XML.
Yes.
Not JSON, my bad. Yeah.
Yes. But I can make a request to the server's API to then, say I want to log in and get an access token, or I want to search for a particular, user, if it were a social media, API or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So in this particular case, the SOAP API is exploitable. And from there, you can gain remote code execution. It's definitely not a great thing.
Oh boy. So is there anything we can do about it besides patch the F5 device?
Yeah. I mean, patching is always key here. Was discovered recently. Yeah. Don't throw it out. I actually, honestly, like the F5 devices do a really good job of maintaining and monitoring and, blocking potential attacks. But,
okay.
And this particular exploit It sounds huge. It's like, oh my God, the devices that are watching for security are now, you know, vulnerable, but they really aren't. There's certain things you need to turn on. And there's certain sort of interfaces that need to be available for this to actually work. So although it can be exploitable, chances are it's not exploitable from the internet for you, but always a good idea to patch.
Okay, and that brings us to our last story, the one that we're probably going to base the title of this show on.
Mm-hmm.
Because this morning, I learned that Elon Musk sent this pseudo-threatening letter to every employee of Twitter saying, if you're going to stay, you have to endure working commit. Harder, longer, commit. You're going to work twice as hard as you did before. And if you don't want to stay, there's the door.
Well,
half the people said, okay, I'm taking option
severance.
B.
And it was a 3-month severance.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
So I always feel bad, Carl, because Carl.
So wait a minute. Let me tell the rest of the story. So the rest of the story is, so I'm seeing the beginning of the end for Twitter, and I had seen rumblings about Mastodon, but I went and looked to see what other sites are recommending, because obviously there are more Twitter knockoffs than Mastodon. So I went looking, and Mastodon seems like the best one. And there are already servers that are topic-oriented that you can go to. So I found one at techhub.social that has about 30,000 people on it. And because it is increasing, ever increasing, because it seems to be the most popular tech one right now, it's getting slow. But anyway, I'm on it, and I announced to the world on Twitter, and I've already got several followers. I think 28 followers right now. And also on Facebook, I grabbed some friends off of there. And then I come, and before you guys jumped on, I made the first link of this show, which is, follow Carl on Mastodon, right? Great. And then I look at the stories that we're going to talk about. And the next one is Mastodon users vulnerable to password stealing attacks.
All right.
Now, let me say first that you're not going to find any password that I've used on Mastodon that I've reused. I used a password manager. So, if somebody steals my password, like Dwayne said he did this morning, I can hopefully just dump it and create another account. But anyway, tell me what you know about this.
Okay. So first off, Carl, I apologize. We've done this many times. So it's funny. Carl says, hey, I got this really cool thing. We're going to do TikToks, like these really small little videos about the show. And I'm like, that day I was like, oh yeah, one of our articles is about how TikTok
is fine.
We're going to use TikTok. And then he's like, I saw his tweet about Mastodon. I'm using Mastodon now. And I'm literally reading this hack. And I'm like, oh, he's going to hate me.
It's not like you created the hate.
I don't hate you. I just, you can't win, right?
You cannot win. So what's interesting about this hack, so Mastodon, I've been digging into Mastodon quite a bit because I use Twitter for all of my, a lot of my cybersecurity latest news. Yeah, feeds, hacks, exploits. I follow researchers. Like, I'm constantly seeing a lot of the latest and greatest things that come out that generally then hit the news, weeks later. So I like using Twitter for that. And I've seen Twitter start to implode, especially in the cybersecurity realm. So I started looking around. Like, I have an account on Counter Social. Counter Social is run by the Jester, who's kind of a famous hacker. That's one place I have an account. And then I started looking, Mastodon, maybe I'll take a look at Mastodon and see if that's a good place. And I started digging into the infrastructure. How does Mastodon work? Right? Twitter is run by Twitter, and all their servers are owned by Twitter. That's not the case with Mastodon. With Mastodon, this is run by the public and it's open source. Right. So I can take, actually Pulsar Security probably should. We could take, the Mastodon software and run it on our own server. Keep it available, keep it manageable. Heck, maybe we'll start talking to, we'll dig through some of the code and make sure it's as secure as possible. So what's interesting is you can leverage that server and connect to the server and have an account on that server, but you also have the ability to then move around and talk to other servers. So
right.
in essence, it looks like a massive community, even though you're being housed by some, you know, volunteer, if you will, who puts up a server.
Right.
Fast forward. So a lot of security researchers have been talking about Mastodon and starting to look at how vulnerable or not vulnerable it is.
Okay.
One of the researchers, Gareth Hayes, had discovered an interesting way to manipulate a Mastodon post. So he said, okay, cool. Can I put in HTML code?
Wait a minute. Are you about to give us some...
It's criminal career advice.
Are you about to tell all the hackers how to steal my password?
I am. Yes, kids. Oh, if you want to steal Christ. The new Mastodon passwords. So what's interesting is you know, Gareth said, hey, I wonder if I could put a fake verified tag up on a post. And he found out, yeah, he actually can put some HTML code in there. But there's some restrictions as to where that HTML code can go. So we found a couple ways around it. And actually, we're going to post a link to this. This is a Portswigger article. He found a couple ways around that and said, okay, what can I do with it? Now that I can put up some HTML code, what can I do with it? And because the post is coming from the Mastodon server, you have access to what the Mastodon server would have access to from the client. So if I were to put up an HTML input box that's asking for password, and you have a Chrome autofill turned on, something along those lines, well, your browser is going to autofill the password into that text field because it assumes you're on the Mastodon server. That page is asking for password now, so let me autofill it in. Then what he was able to do is, because he couldn't manipulate style sheets, he actually found a way to set the opacity of that text field to zero so you can't see it, and then submit the password.
Hard.
So it's really cool. There's some really neat technical hacks in here that he did, but
is that hack not just for Mastodon? It sounds like something you could do on a lot of servers that require password.
It's entirely possible. Any place that you could put your own HTML style code and actually then get that to submit automatically.
That's always a bad thing.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So it was an interesting twist on, you know, hey, everybody's going to Mastodon, but, you know that right now, if you have autofill turned on, there's this hack where we could steal your password. Now, Carl mentioned a really great thing before this article. Carl uses a password manager. So
yes, I did.
Even if somebody were to steal Carl's password, let's say Carl has auto submit my password, you know, auto fill in my password turned on, which I don't. I actually have to click on my 1Password and tell it to fill in. But if you have auto passwords turned on where it's just going to, you know, submit your password when you connect to the site, because you're using a password manager, you're protected, right? Somebody might compromise your Mastodon account, maybe, but you're not. They're not going to compromise anything else.
Right.
So, you know, our advice here, use a password manager like Carl is. Be like Carl, kids.
Be like me, man.
Use a password manager. And B, you know, turn off auto.
Be stupid
fill.
And diabetic. It works.
You wear it well.
I'm sorry. What were you saying?
No, you know what? I think that's it. I'm done. Yes.
Leave on a high note.
I give up.
So yeah, use a password manager, folks.
Yes.
And,
use a password manager.
I can't really tell people not to use Mastodon because it seems pretty good.
Yeah, and honestly, I think I think it's great that security researchers are starting to see Mastodon might be a place that most people move over to. So they're starting to look into how secure really is it. And the fact that it's open source code means that, you know, pretty much anybody could look into it, which is great.
So what I like about Mastodon is, first of all, you don't have to run your own server, but you find a server that already has a community and a theme. And it's, as you said, run by a volunteer. But if you find another server, like, so for example, if TechHub becomes too crowded and there's too many people on and the volunteer running it doesn't have or doesn't want to put up the money to increase it, you know, somebody else could make a tech server, and there are a couple other ones, and you can just move your account from one server to another. Also, what you can do is once you're in the Mastodon network, you know, you can have people, follow people who are on different servers. So think of the server as just a place to land, but the Mastodon network is bigger than that.
Yeah. Right. That was the big question a lot of people asked in the last week is, if I join a Mastodon server, does that mean I can only talk to people on that server? And the case, that's the answer is no.
No, right. It's not.
Right.
Yep. So I'm really happy with it so far.
Yeah. Awesome. And, yeah. You know, I think it's the story of Mastodon is how to burn $44 billion in 2 weeks.
in the most destructive way possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just to talk, we have a few minutes. So just to talk about the Twitter implosion, there's critical systems that are now alleged to have no engineers whatsoever watching them.
Right.
They're just hoping they don't get blown down. And so Musk's thesis was, oh, this is all bloatware. You don't need any of this stuff. And a lot of the senior engineers have come back and say, yeah, some of this stuff is involved in actually delivering tweets, and it'll run until it hits something. Yep. But as our friend Richard Campbell said in a message, he says, those servers haven't been cold in a long time. Yeah. So if it all stops, the startup process is probably a process.
Right.
And people don't appreciate that. Once it's down, it might not get back up again.
Do you know if there are any security services that nobody's watching either?
I don't know. We they're not transparent enough, and nobody's for fear of being sued or labeled a hacker, nobody's posting that stuff that I've seen.
Yeah. Well, that's good anyway.
But probably.
So I plan on making an account on Mastodon for security this week. So once we have that, people can follow us there. And I'm also doing other ones. So there seems like accounts are topical, right? Mm. Like I could run a server in my garage and just have a local music scene network.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right. And only people who want to follow, you know, what the bands in the New London area are doing would follow that. And I think that's a really good idea, taking a nod from Nextdoor, you know?
Yeah.
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 Yep. I like it.
So I'm going to do that.
Now, I don't believe you ban anybody from outside of your community from joining. It's just that it's a self-selection kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if somebody in Ohio wants to see what the New London music scene is doing, more power to them. But
right.
Yeah, right. That's fine. Awesome. Okay. That's a show. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Great talking to you.
All right. See you on Mastodon. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.